All right, so you've given us this pretty fascinating material here to look at today on these three prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. And they spoke to the Jewish people right after they returned from exile in Babylon.
Right.
We're talking rebuilding on every level, their lives, their community, their faith.
Yep.
And they really had some pretty serious things to say about all of that, especially when it came to the temple. So today, what we're going to try to do is explore their messages, unpack the historical setting, and even see how these prophets connect to the New Testament in some pretty surprising ways, I think. One thing that really jumped out at me was just how much these prophets sound like they could be speaking to us today, even thousands of years later. You know, we're talking about getting your priorities straight, dealing with complacency, recognizing the power of God's Spirit. I mean, these are all things we all wrestle with.
Absolutely. And I think that's what makes studying these prophets so compelling. You know, they're speaking to these kind of timeless human struggles, but their messages come out of a very specific historical moment. So, you know, imagine after decades of exile in Babylon, the Jewish people are finally allowed to return to their homeland.
It's like finally coming home after being away for years, only everything's changed.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not just about, you know, unpacking boxes. It's about rebuilding your entire life, your community, and your faith, you know, from the ground up. And it wasn't easy, you know? There was opposition, there were delays.
I bet there are moments when people wondered, like, is this even worth it?
Absolutely. And yet, amidst all of those challenges, these prophets emerge with these messages of hope and encouragement, urging the people to stay focused on God's work.
So let's talk about Haggai. I mean, his message just seems so straightforward, but also kind of intense. He's basically telling the people, stop messing around and prioritize finishing the temple, even over your own personal comfort. It almost makes you wonder, like, what was going on that he had to be so blunt?
Well, you know, Haggai was speaking at a time when the people had started to focus on rebuilding their own homes and lives, and the temple reconstruction had really stalled. And he saw this as a sign that their priorities were just out of whack.
So it's not just about bricks and mortar.
Right.
It's about what we put first in our lives.
Yes.
Is it our own comfort and security? Or is it God's work? What would you say is our temple today? That thing that God's calling us to build that maybe we're neglecting?
That's a really powerful question. And, you know, Haggai doesn't mince words about the consequences of getting those priorities wrong. He tells the people that they're experiencing a lack of abundance, a lack of fulfillment. You know, they planted much, but harvested little, he says.
Wow. Yeah. That really hits home. It's like we can put in a lot of effort into things, but if we're not aligned with God's will, it's never going to feel truly satisfying.
Exactly. And, you know, Haggai also highlights the importance of holiness and proper worship, even challenging the priests with these kind of pop quiz-like questions about purity laws.
Yeah. It's like he's saying, okay, you want to be priests in this new temple. Let's see if you're really ready.
Right. He's reminding them that serving God requires more than just going through the motions. It requires a genuine heart of reverence and obedience.
But Haggai's not all doom and gloom.
Right.
He also has some pretty amazing promises for the people. Yeah. I thought it was really inspiring how he talks about God's Spirit dwelling in the temple and how its glory will be even greater than Solomon's temple.
Right. You know, those promises were meant to infuse the people with hope and motivation. And then there's this fascinating detail about Zerubbabel. He was a descendant of King David and the governor of Judah at the time. And Haggai points to him as someone who has a special role to play in God's plan.
So it's almost like he's giving us a little glimpse of something bigger. You know, something beyond this immediate rebuilding project.
Right. And that's precisely what we see as we move into the book of Zechariah. You know, he picks up on these themes of hope and future glory, but he takes them to a whole new level.
Okay. So let's talk about Zechariah. This is where things get really interesting. We're talking horses, horns, flying scrolls. I mean, what was he drinking?
Well, Zechariah is a master of apocalyptic literature, a genre that arose in times of hardship and uncertainty.
So it's not meant to be taken literally. I mean, I can't imagine a flying scroll being very aerodynamic.
Not necessarily. You know, the imagery is meant to be symbolic. It's conveying deeper spiritual truths and offering hope in the midst of those challenging circumstances.
So how do we make sense of these wild visions? It's like, it sounds like a fever dream.
Well, it's important to understand the historical context, right? You know, the people were still facing opposition and setbacks, and Zechariah was trying to encourage them with a vision of a future where God would ultimately triumph over evil.
So he's speaking to the people in his own time, but he's also giving them and us a glimpse of this hope that kind of transcends our immediate circumstances.
Precisely. And that hope is rooted in God's promises and his unwavering commitment to his people.
Okay. So how do we even begin to untangle these visions? Where do we even begin?
Well, you know, the visions are structured in a way that moves from addressing immediate concerns about Jerusalem to offering these glimpses of future hope. You know, he talks about the rebuilding of the temple, but then he also has these incredible visions of a future Jerusalem that's transformed, filled with God's glory. There's this real sense of movement, of progression towards this glorious climax.
And there's all these symbols sprinkled throughout, you know, horns, craftsmen, lampstands. It's like he's speaking in code.
Yeah. And each of those symbols has a meaning, often representing the forces that oppose God's people and those who are working to rebuild and restore.
Yeah. I was particularly struck by that vision of Joshua, the high priest, standing there before the angel of the Lord in these filthy clothes, and Satan's right there accusing him. I mean, it's intense. What's the significance of the filthy clothes?
It's a powerful image of sin and its consequences. And it's interesting to consider that Joshua, as the high priest, might be symbolically bearing the weight of the people's sin.
Yeah, it makes you think about our own filthy clothes, so to speak. We all have those things. Those things we're ashamed of, you know, things that make us feel unworthy to stand before God.
Right. And that's where the connection to Jesus becomes so powerful. You know, he's our high priest, the one who takes away our sin and makes us clean before God.
And speaking of Jesus, there's that other vision that really stood out to me, the one with the branch, right? It's this figure who seems to combine the roles of high priest and king, wearing a crown right there on his head. It feels like such a clear pointer to Jesus.
Absolutely. You know, Zechariah is pointing towards a future leader, a Messiah, who will embody both the priestly and the kingly roles, ushering in this time of peace and righteousness. You know, it's a reminder that God's plan for redemption involves not just forgiveness, but also restoration and renewal on a much larger scale.
So Zechariah is giving us this really grand vision of hope, but he's also grounding it in the very real struggles of the people in his time.
And that's what makes his message so enduring, right? He's acknowledging the pain, the uncertainty, the opposition they're facing, but he's also pointing them and us towards this future where God's purposes will ultimately prevail.
One image that really stuck with me was that one of God's feet standing on the Mount of Olives, splitting it in two. I know the Mount of Olives is traditionally a burial place for Jewish people because they believe that's where God will return. Like, they want to be right there when it happens.
Yeah. Powerful image, isn't it? It evokes this sense of anticipation, this waiting for God's ultimate victory. And it makes you think about where you want to be standing, you know, both physically and spiritually when that day comes. What are we building our lives on? What kind of foundation are we laying?
So we've got Haggai calling the people back to their priorities.
Mm-hmm.
Zechariah painting this epic vision of hope and future glory. And then we come to Malachi. He seems to have a bit of a different vibe. It's like he's that friend who's not afraid to, you know, give you a little tough love.
Right. Malachi is speaking to a generation or two after the initial excitement of the return from exile has faded. You know, the temple's built, the walls are up, but it seems like the people have slipped into this kind of spiritual complacency. They're going through the motions, but their hearts aren't really in it.
It's like they've traded the challenges of rebuilding for the challenges of just maintaining.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And Malachi is calling them out on it. He's challenging them to examine their hearts, renew their commitment to God. It's not enough to just go through these outward rituals. There needs to be a genuine inward transformation.
One example that really stood out to me was when he calls them out on bringing these subpar sacrifices. I mean, imagine bringing your boss the worst of what you have. It's almost insulting, right? Malachi's saying God deserves our best. He deserves our wholehearted devotion, not just our leftovers.
May. It's a reminder that our worship should be an expression of our love and gratitude, not just an obligation. You know, what are we offering to God today? Is it our best, or are we holding back?
Yeah. And Malachi doesn't just talk about our relationship with God. He also connects it to how we treat each other. He's really passionate about justice, especially calling out how the people are mistreating each other, neglecting the vulnerable in their community.
Right. You know, he's reminding them that their relationship with God is inseparable from how they treat their fellow human beings. It's not enough to just go to temple and offer sacrifices. True faith is expressed in acts of love, compassion, and justice.
It's this recurring theme throughout the Bible, isn't it? Our faith isn't meant to be compartmentalized. It's supposed to permeate every aspect of our lives, including how we interact with those around us, especially those who are most in need.
It's about living out the values of God's kingdom here and now. And Malachi challenges us to ask ourselves some tough questions. You know, are we being just in our dealings with others? Are we using our resources and influence to advocate for those who are marginalized?
And I also found it interesting how Malachi reminds the people of God's enduring love for them. He uses this example of Jacob and Esau, saying that God chose Jacob not because he was more deserving, but simply because God loved him. It seems like he's emphasizing the free gift of God's grace, you know, even when we mess up.
Absolutely. It's a reminder that God's love is not based on our performance or merit. It's a free gift, and it's the foundation of our relationship with him. And it's this love that compels us to respond with love and obedience.
But Malachi is not just a softie, right? He also talks about this day of the Lord, which sounds pretty intense.
That's right. He doesn't shy away from talking about judgment, but even that is rooted in God's desire to purify and restore his people.
Can you explain a bit more about what that day of the Lord concept means in the Old Testament context?
Sure. So it's a day when God will intervene in human history to bring about justice and righteousness. It's often depicted as this day of judgment for the wicked and vindication for the righteous. In the Old Testament, it can refer to specific events like, you know, military victories or natural disasters that were seen as expressions of God's judgment.
So it's not just some far off future event. It's a reality that the people were already experiencing in various ways.
Exactly. And Malachi is connecting that concept to a future ultimate day of the Lord, one that will usher in this new era of peace and righteousness.
And he ties that into the prophecy about this messenger who will prepare the way for the Lord. This is a direct reference to John the Baptist, who's seen as this forerunner to Jesus in the New Testament.
That's right. Malachi is closing the Old Testament with this call to remember God's law, to turn back to him, and to anticipate the coming of the Messiah. It's a perfect bridge to the story that unfolds in the New Testament.
Almost like he's setting the stage, you know?
Yeah.
Getting us ready for the main event.
And that main event is the coming of Jesus, who fulfills the hopes and promises that we see foreshadowed in these prophets.
So we've gone pretty deep into these three prophets. What would you say are the key takeaways for us today? What do we do with all of this?
Well, I think one of the biggest takeaways is just the importance of aligning our priorities with God's will. You know, Haggai's message is a reminder that our lives are meant to be about more than just pursuing our own comfort and security. You know, we're called to be builders, to invest our time and energy in things that have eternal significance. So, you know, what's your temple, that thing that God's calling you to build or contribute to?
It makes you think about how we're spending our time, our energy, our resources. Are we investing in things that matter, things that align with God's heart?
Right. And Malachi reminds us that our relationship with God isn't just about our private devotional lives. It's about living out our faith in every sphere of life, our families, our work, our communities. It's about pursuing justice, advocating for the vulnerable, and reflecting God's love to those around us.
Yeah, it's not just about going to church on Sunday, right? It's about being the church every day of the week.
Yeah, exactly. And finally, I think it's important to remember the hope that these prophets offer. Even though they speak about judgment, you know, they also point us to a future restoration, a time when God's kingdom will be fully established.
Yeah. Zechariah's visions in particular are just so full of hope and beauty. It's like he's giving us this little glimpse of heaven on earth.
Right. And it's a reminder that even in the midst of our current struggles, our challenges, you know, God is at work. He's weaving together this tapestry of redemption that will ultimately culminate in his glorious victory.
And that's a hope worth holding on to, even when things feel bleak. It's a reminder that our story doesn't end here. There's this bigger story unfolding, and we have the privilege of being a part of it.
Yeah. You know, that image of God's feet standing on the Mount of Olives, it's a reminder that we're not just waiting for some far-off future event. God is present and active in our lives right now, inviting us to partner with him in bringing about his kingdom.
It's a call to action, isn't it? It's not enough to just sit back and wait. We're invited to be active participants in God's redemptive work in the world.
And that work starts with examining our own hearts, aligning our priorities with God's will, and living out our faith in tangible ways. You know, it's about being these agents of hope, healing, and reconciliation in a world that so desperately needs it.
All right. So we've explored the messages of Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. We've unpacked their historical context, delved into their symbolism, and connected their words to our lives today. What's one final thought, one nugget of wisdom that you want to leave our listener with?
Well, I think what strikes me most about these prophets is their unwavering belief in God's power to transform lives and communities. You know, even when they're delivering these tough messages, there's this underlying current of hope, this conviction that God is always at work restoring and redeeming.
It's like they're saying, don't give up. Don't settle for mediocrity. God has something so much better for you, for your community, for the world.
Exactly. And I think that's a message we all need to hear, especially in times of discouragement or uncertainty.
You know, one thing that we haven't really touched on much is that passage in Malachi where God talks about choosing Jacob over Esau. He says, was not Esau Jacob's brother?
Mm.
Declares the Lord. Yet I have loved Jacob, but Esau I have hated. And, you know, it's a pretty strong statement, and I know it can be troubling for some people.
Yeah, it's definitely a passage that requires careful interpretation. It's important to remember that the word hate here doesn't carry the same emotional weight that it does in our modern understanding. It's more about God's sovereign choice of Jacob's line to be the vehicle for his covenant blessings.
So it's not about God, you know, hating Esau as a person.
Right. It's about God choosing to work through a specific lineage to bring about his redemptive plan for the world.
It's a reminder that God's ways are not our ways, and his purposes are often beyond our full comprehension. But even when we don't understand, we can trust in his goodness and his faithfulness.
Right. And ultimately, we see that God's love extends to all people, not just a select few, you know. The story of redemption that unfolds throughout the Bible culminates in Jesus, who offers salvation to everyone who believes in him, regardless of their background or ancestry.
It's just this beautiful picture of God's, you know, all-encompassing love and grace.
And that's the message that I hope our listener takes away from this deep dive into the post-exilic prophets, you know. They offer this challenge, a call to action, but also a really profound message of hope and encouragement.
Yeah, they remind us that God is at work in the world,
yeah,
rebuilding, restoring, reconciling. And he invites us to join him in that work.
It's an invitation to step out of our comfort zones, to examine our priorities, and to live lives that reflect God's heart for justice, mercy, and love.
And to remember that even in the midst of all the uncertainty and challenge that we face, we can cling to the hope of this future, where God's kingdom will be fully realized.
Right. A future where every tear will be wiped away, where justice will roll down like waters, and where God's glory will just fill the earth. You know, it's a future worth fighting for. It's a future worth living for.
And that's what I love about studying these prophets. You know,
mm-hmm.
they don't just tell us what to do. They inspire us to become the kind of people who are ready for that future, who are actively working to bring it about.
Mm-hmm, yeah. They remind us that we're not just passive spectators in God's story. We're active participants. We're co-laborers with him in the work of redemption.
And that's an incredible privilege and an awesome responsibility.
It is. And I hope that as our listener reflects on the messages of Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, they'll be inspired to embrace that privilege and that responsibility, you know, to live lives that are marked by faithfulness, justice, and hope.
To rebuild their own temples,
mm-hmm.
right? And to partner with God in making his kingdom a reality here on earth.
Exactly. And that's a legacy worth leaving.